Chapter 13. We stand at the edge of the grass in front of the sanctuary, side by side, our backs to the temple. Together we look out at the horizon to the north. That's the direction Cetricus Ra's warship will be coming from. We've got until sunset. The three of us are the last line of defense. The day has only gotten hotter. At least that lets me pretend the sweat dampening the back of my shirt is all from the heat. I point towards the tree line. The Moogs did us a favor cutting down all that jungle, I say as I cock my head, trying to gauge the distance. We should be able to see the ship coming from at least a mile out.
They'll see us, too, Adam replies, his voice somber. I don't know, Six. This seems like madness.
I'd been waiting for Adam to say something like that. I knew from the look on his face during our conversation with John and Sam that he wasn't on board with us staying to fight Cetricus Ra and his warship.
Cetricus Ra cannot be allowed to enter the sanctuary, Marina says before I can reply. That is a Loric place, a sacred place. He would defile it. Whatever he wants, we must stop him from getting it.
I glance from Marina to Adam and shrug at the Mogadorian.
You heard her.
Adam shakes his head, growing more frustrated.
Look, I understand this place is special to you, but it's not worth trading our lives for.
I disagree, Marina replies curtly. She's definitely already made up her mind. There is no way she's leaving the sanctuary now, not after all that's happened here.
We accomplished what we needed to here, Adam argues. Some of the humans have legacies now. There's nothing Cetricus Ra can do to change that. He's too late.
We don't know that, I reply, glancing over my shoulder at the sanctuary. If he got in there, he could,
I don't know, reverse what we've done, maybe, or do something to hurt the entity.
Adam frowns. He's controlled your home planet for more than a decade and never been able to take away your legacies. Not permanently, anyway.
Because Lorien was here, Marina replies emphatically. It's been hiding here, and now he's found it. We can't let him touch the entity. The consequences could be catastrophic.
Adam throws up his hands.
You're not listening to reason.
I glance away from Adam, towards the landing strip cluttered with disabled skimmers. Of course my eyes find their way to Firi Dunra. Still gagged and tied to a wheel strut, she's made an effort to sit up straighter, probably trying to listen in to our conversation. I can tell by the way that her face crinkles around the duct tape that she's smiling at me. I remember what she said earlier this morning, when she was trying to convince me that Adam was secretly out to get us.
You don't think we can win, so you're afraid to fight, I say bluntly, regretting the words almost as soon as they're out of my mouth.
Adam whips around to look at me, then follows my gaze to Firi. He must make the connection between my statement and her earlier rant. He disgustedly shakes his head and walks a few steps away from me. Marina nudges me, whispering,
Six.
I'm sorry, Adam, I say quickly. Seriously, that was a low blow.
No, you're right, Six, Adam replies dryly, shrugging. I'm a coward because I don't want to die today. I'm a coward because as a boy I watched from the deck of one of those warships as your home planet was obliterated. I'm a coward because I think we should find a better way. A smarter way.
All right, Adam, I say, feeling a tightness in my chest at his casual mention of Lorien's destruction. We hear you.
It might not be smart, Marina adds, but it's what's right.
Adam rounds on us, his tone acidic.
In that case, which one of you is going to do it?
Do what? I ask.
Kill Ella, he replies. We all heard what John said. Cetricus Ra has her bound with his own version of your old Loric charm. You can't hurt him without first hurting her. I've never even met the girl, and I can tell you right now I'm not going to do it. So tell me,
Which of you is going to kill your friend?
No one, I say resolutely, locking eyes with Adam. We're going to figure out a way to stop Cetricus Ra without hurting her.
Adam glances up at the sun, as if trying to figure out how much daylight we've got left.
Great, Adam says. Fantastic. Our resources are some broken-down ships and whatever the hell we can find in the jungle.
Tell me how the hell you're going to stop Cetricus Ra in our situation, Six.
John said there'd be backup coming. The military...
He said he'd try, Adam practically shouts at me. Look, I trust John, but he's thousands of miles away. Help is thousands of miles away. Right here, it's just us. We're it.
Help is right behind us, Marina says. Her voice is still calm, but there's a strain there. What Adam's been saying has gotten under her skin. The sanctuary will give us a way to fight.
Adam takes this in for a moment before rolling his eyes. A miracle. That's what the two of you are hoping for? A miracle? I get that you woke that thing in there up, and I know it let you talk to your friend one last time. But that's all it's going to do, okay? It's done helping us.
Don't believe me? Maybe we could ask some of the Lorik how much that entity helped during the last Mogadorian invasion, if they weren't all dead.
The air around me gets cold. At first, it feels pretty good in this overbearing jungle heat, until I realize that it's Marina fuming in her own special way. She takes a step towards Adam, her fists clenched, the whole serene sister of the sanctuary thing dropped in a hurry.
Don't talk about what you don't know, you monster! She yells, jabbing her finger in the air at him.
An icicle shoots from Marina's index finger and stabs into the dirt at Adam's feet. Immediately, it begins to melt. Adam takes a surprised step back, staring at Marina.
Enough! I say, stepping in between the two of them. This isn't getting us anywhere.
From the airstrip, Firi Dunra makes a series of muffled gagging noises. I realize that she's laughing at us. I tune her out, turn around, and take Marina by the shoulders. Her skin is cold to the touch.
Much as I love the air conditioning right now, you need to walk away for a minute, I tell her.
Marina gives me a look of disbelief, like she can't believe I'm siding with Adam against her. I shake my head gently and raise my eyebrows, letting her know that's not what this is. She sighs, pushes a hand through her hair, and walks towards the sanctuary. I turn to glare at Adam. At first he doesn't look at me. He's too busy watching the icicle Marina fired at him turn to water.
Lucky she didn't take your eye out, I say, only half-joking.
I know, he replies, finally looking up at me.
Six, look. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have brought up Lorien. That's not my place.
You bet your ass it isn't, I say, taking a step closer to him. It's all right. You're freaking out a little. I'm going to chalk it up to that. But yeah, don't talk about our dead families and massacred planet again, okay? Because I seriously wanted to punch you in the face.
Adam nods.
Understood.
I'm still not sure you do, I reply, lowering my voice and getting even closer. Let me make it perfectly clear for you, Adam. I've got no intention of dying out here today. You think I don't get that the odds are against us? Dude, I don't need that explained to me. But you didn't magically fix one of those skimmers while I wasn't looking, did you?
He frowns at me.
You know I didn't, Six.
Then we're stuck here until reinforcements arrive. And if we're stuck here, we are going to fight. You get me?
We could run, Adam replies, pointing to the jungle. We don't need a skimmer to escape.
Look at it this way. Booking it into the jungle is never going to stop being an option, I admit to him. If the Anubis gets here and things don't go our way, we'll run.
Will we?
Adam asks, his gaze sliding off me and towards Marina.
All of us.
I turn my head to subtly watch Marina. Her back is to us as she takes deep breaths, calming herself. She's staring at the sanctuary again, like she's been doing most of the day. Marina's developed an almost religious devotion to the old temple. I understand why. Our experience with the entity was pretty heavy, maybe more so for a girl who was raised around a bunch of nuns. Not to mention, the guy she loved is buried in there. The sanctuary's become both a religious symbol and a gravesite to her. I'll drag her away if I have to, I tell Adam, meaning it. Adam seems satisfied with that answer. The frantic look he had when he berated us is gone, replaced by cold Mogadorian calculation. I never thought I'd actually be happy to see those features on someone's face. I can start removing the force field cloaking modules for John and keep trying to repair the skimmer, but neither of those things is going to help defend this place or survive an attack by the Anubis. He looks at me, eyebrows raised. So what's our plan for not dying?
Good question.
I take a look around. The plan aspect of this whole thing is something I'm still working out. How can we stop Cetricus Ra from doing whatever he wants to the sanctuary? How can we even hurt him without endangering Ella? Once again, my gaze drifts towards Firi Dunra. She isn't laughing at us anymore. Instead, she's watching us like a hawk. I think of her hands, currently tied to the wheel strut behind her back, and the way they were bandaged up, the dirt-stained dressings covering electrical burns she suffered from the sanctuary's force field. The Moogs spent years out here, trying to force their way into the sanctuary to earn favor with their beloved leader. It's too bad we didn't see a fuse box or control panel inside the sanctuary to turn that force field back on. At least we know where he's going, I say out loud, still thinking. Cetricus Ra wants inside the sanctuary. He's got to come down from his big bad warship. That gives us a chance.
A chance to do what? Adam asks.
We can't hurt Cetricus Ra without hurting Ella, which means we can't really stop him from muscling into the sanctuary. But if he's got Ella and the sanctuary, well, maybe we should take something of his. Adam catches on quickly.
Are you thinking?
You did mention you always wanted to fly one of those warships. Whatever Cetricus Ra wants in the sanctuary, he won't be able to take it anywhere, I say, feeling the beginnings of a plan starting to take shape, because we're going to rescue Ella and steal his ship. Our preparations begin mostly in silence, tension still in the air between Marina and Adam. We start by going through the equipment that the Mogadorians left behind. There are crates piled in one of the larger tents, a veritable arsenal of weaponry and tools that the Moogs shipped down here, only to have it all break against the sanctuary's force field. There's a whole array of Mogadorian blasters, but the rest of the gear appears to have been manufactured here on Earth. There are crates of weapons stamped as property of the U.S. military, mining equipment shipped from Australia, and what Adam tells me are experimental EMPs covered in Chinese lettering. Adam went through this stuff earlier when he was looking for spare skimmer parts, so he knows how it's organized. We want explosives, I tell him. What have they got? Carefully, Adam moves some crates around before opening up one packed with blocks of a beige substance that reminds me of clay. Plastic explosives, he says. C4, I think. You know how to work with that stuff?
A little bit, Adam replies, and starts gently pushing aside objects in the crate.
Besides the C4, there are also some wires and cylinders that I assume have some role in detonation. After a quick search, Adam smirks and holds up a small paper booklet.
There's instructions.
Perfect, Marina mutters. How many bombs total? I ask. Adam does a quick count of the clay bricks. 12. But I can break them up and make them smaller if you want. The smaller the brick, the smaller the explosion, though. And we've only got the dozen blasting caps, so the smaller ones would need to be wired together. Before replying to Adam, I poke my head out of the tent and do a quick count of skimmers parked on the landing strip. 16 of them, including the one Adam's been working on and the one Fiery Dunra's tied to. We should be good with 12, I tell Adam. Don't blow yourself up, okay? I'll try my best. Great. Come on, Marina. I grab an empty burlap sack from the Moog supply tent before setting out towards the landing strip. Marina follows next to me.
What exactly are we wiring to explode, Six?
She asks. Hold that thought, I say, approaching the skimmer where Fairy Dunra is restrained. She watches me approach, eyes hot and angry, not smiling through her duct tape anymore. I think she knows what's coming. She struggles a bit against her bonds, but can't do much to stop me from pulling that burlap sack over her head.
Sick of looking at her? Marina asks.
Yeah, that. And I don't want her to see what we're up to. I lead Marina away from our prisoner, towards the other skimmers on the airstrip. We're going to wire the ships. I figure Cetricus Ra's not coming alone. He'll have other Moogs with him. We don't have the force field to keep them out of the sanctuary, but we can damn sure blow them up if they get close. Thanks to Fiery Dunra, none of the skimmers are in condition to move on their own. One by one, Marina and I use our telekinesis to push the ships into position. With the two of us working in tandem, the weight isn't that bad, at least once we get the wheels rolling. We space the skimmers about 30 yards apart in a semicircle in front of the sanctuary's entrance. The ships end up on almost the exact same line as the sanctuary's force field. Now that we've moved most of the skimmers, there's a big empty space on the landing strip. Let's hope Cetricus Ra parks his big-ass warship in the most obvious place possible, I say, tracing my finger through the air from the landing strip and towards the sanctuary's entrance. There's only one way into the sanctuary, so his people will have to walk right through the ships, which is where we're going to hide the bombs.
That will at least eliminate his first wave, Marina says.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll get them nice and confused and looking for an attack, so that Adam and I can sneak in behind them and board the Anubis.
Marina frowns at me. Wait, where am I in all this?
Before I can answer, Adam emerges from the Mogadorian armory with a duffel bag filled with plastic explosives. He takes a look at what we've done so far and nods approvingly. Then he walks over to us, sets the duffel bag down, and produces a large remote control. Check this out, Adam says. I guess the Moogs were trying to use sequenced explosions to take down the force field, maybe thinking timed detonations at multiple angles would bring the thing down. He hands me the remote control. It's got a row of 20 switches, each with a corresponding red and green light. 12 of the red bulbs are currently lit up. Adam comes up next to me, explaining how the device works. The blasting caps all have remote detonators, he says, and flicks the leftmost switch on the controller one notch up. The little light above the switch changes from red to green. I just armed the first bomb. I glance to the duffel bag at our feet, presently filled with a ton of plastic explosives, then back to the controller. There's a little metal tooth that you need to guide the switch around for it to reach its third notch, probably to keep anyone's finger from slipping. Still, I'm a little nervous about this demonstration. Okay. Safety first. Adam flicks the switch back into its original position, the red light coming back on. If you were to press the switch all the way up, the blasting cap would get the signal to fire its charge, and the bomb would detonate. I nod once, then hand the remote control over to Marina. You get all that?
Yes, but... Her brow furrows as she accepts the controller.
You asked where you're going to be, I say. You're going to be hiding in the jungle, controlling the sanctuary's defenses. Marina considers this for a moment, a smile slowly spreading across her face.
It will be my pleasure.
Adam walks down the line of ships, sticking lunchbox-sized parcels of plastic explosives on the underbelly of each skimmer. A cautious Mogadorian might notice them, yeah, but not before it would already be too late. Meanwhile, Marina and I maneuver the last two skimmers past the ones we've wired to explode. These we position on opposite sides of the sanctuary, both at the very edge of the jungle, and both pointing towards the sanctuary's entrance. We can create a crossfire here, I say, opening up the cockpit on one of the skimmers. If your telekinesis is strong enough to work the controls...
It will have to be, Marina replies.
Adam comes over, powers on the skimmer's weapon systems, and explains to Marina which buttons she would need to press to discharge the cannons. Marina spends a long time studying the controls, memorizing them, committing them to her mind's eye. Then she walks slowly away from the skimmers and heads to a patch of jungle far away from the wired-up ships, but close enough to have a clear view of the entire battlefield. It's from this hidden spot that she'll defend the sanctuary. Marina concentrates. She reaches one hand out towards the skimmer.
Ugh, she says after a moment, rubbing the bridge of her nose. I don't know, Six. It's hard to use my telekinesis on something I can't see.
We try a different tactic. Adam and I walk around the edge of the jungle, propping up Mogadorian blasters in the overgrown grass and trees. We camouflage them with loose branches and leaves, well enough that a Mog warrior wouldn't notice them right off, but not so hidden that Marina can't see them. From her spot, she tests each one, telekinetically pulling the trigger so that a burst of blaster fire sizzles into the clearing in front of the sanctuary. Nice, I say. You don't even have to hit anyone, Marina. You just have to make them think the attack is coming from all sides. Now that we're finished, there are only two skimmers left on the runway, the one we came down here in, that Adam's been trying to repair, and the one that's got Fury Dunra tied to it. I'm satisfied with our setup so far. It feels good to be doing something, at least.
This is good, Six, Marina says, her arms crossed, looking at the Mogadorian ships now arranged like guards in front of the sanctuary. Perfect if Cetricus Ross sends in his warriors. But what if he's out there on the front line himself? Hurting him would mean hurting Ella. We can't risk that.
You're right, I reply. We'll have to figure out a way to at least slow him down. I start towards the passageway that leads into the sanctuary, and pretend not to notice when Adam lags behind, touching Marina gently on the elbow as he does. They slow but only walk a few steps behind me. With my enhanced hearing, it's pretty much impossible for me not to eavesdrop. I'm sorry about before, Adam says to her quietly. I got carried away.
It's all right, Marina replies kindly. I shouldn't have called you a monster. It just slipped out. I don't really think that.
Adam laughs once, self-deprecatingly. No, you know, I've wondered a lot over the years if that's not a good word for us. Marina makes a noise, about to say something more, but Adam cuts her off. It's okay. I'm sorry again. About everything. I know what it's like to lose someone you care about. I shouldn't. I won't be so cavalier about leaving this place again. I get why it's so important, what it means.
Thank you, Adam.
I turn around, pretending not to have been listening to their entire conversation. We're in front of what used to be the sanctuary's hidden door. It's a narrow stone archway leading to stairs that run all the way down to the hidden chamber beneath the temple. So, I say, hands on my hips, how do we stall the most powerful Mogadorian in the universe without hurting him, while at the same time stealing his warship out from under him? Adam raises his hand. I have a question. I can see the wheels turning in his head. Shoot. This entire plan is predicated on chance. Cetricus Ra going for the door, Cetricus Ra sending out warriors, Marina being able to distract them with some bombs and ghost weapons. I open my mouth to respond, worried he's getting freaked out again, but Adam keeps rolling. It's the best option we've got, I agree with you. But assuming it works, assuming we do manage to steal the Anubis while Cetricus Ra sits down here, what then? What do we do next? We still can't kill him.
But he won't be able to kill us either, I reply. I know it's not exactly the brilliant strategic gem Adam's hoping for, but I honestly haven't thought that far ahead. I've been too focused on our immediate survival.
Perhaps we could negotiate, Marina suggests half-heartedly, for Ella or the Sanctuary.
Despite how fervently he would tell you otherwise, Cetricus Ra has no honor, Adam says. There can be no negotiating.
Then it'll be a stalemate, I say. And that's better than losing, right?
Adam considers my words, digging his heel into the dirt in front of the archway. All right, Adam says. Then I suggest we dig a hole.
A hole?
A pit, Adam continues, in front of the door. A large one. Then we cover it up and let Cetricus Ra fall into it.
I push my toe into the dirt. Thanks to the shadows of the sanctuary and the nearby plant growth, it's soft and a little damp, not like the hard-packed and sun-baked dirt of the runway. All our legacies, that stockpile of Moog weapons, a bunch of C4, and now we're talking about digging a hole.
Well, he's exactly the kind of asshole who doesn't watch where he's going, especially if he's sporting a major boner to get into the sanctuary.
There's an image, Adam replies. Once he's down there, I can ice over the top from my hiding spot, Marina says, getting on board. That could slow him down further.
Well, at least it'll be hilarious to watch him fall in a hole, I add optimistically. It'll have to be pretty big, Adam says, rubbing his chin thoughtfully. He can change sizes.
Good thing we've got legacies to help with the digging, I reply. Even if it only buys us a few minutes, that might be enough to get us on board the Anubis.
One more thing, and you're not going to like this idea, Adam says to Marina before gesturing towards the sanctuary's door. But maybe we should cave that in. It'll be one more thing to get in Cetricus Ra's way.
It's a good idea, but I look over at Marina before saying anything. She thinks about it for a moment, and then shrugs.
They're only stones, she says. What's important is that we protect what's inside.
Should I get some of the C4? Adam asks.
I think I can handle it, I reply, already tapping into my legacy and channeling a small storm. The air gets heavy as I pull together a dark cloud above our heads, a small pattering of raindrops falling loose from it. With a downward motion of my hand, 4 bolts of lightning slice down at an angle Mother Nature couldn't hope to duplicate. The strikes arc into the sanctuary's doorway and explode into the decrepit limestone, collapsing the passage in on itself with a burst of musty air. I step up and take a look at my handiwork. The doorway is now filled with rubble, with some of the interior wall obviously collapsed as well. It won't keep an army of Moogs out forever, and Cetricus Ra will definitely be able to dislodge the rubble with his telekinesis. Still, it's better than nothing. Meanwhile, with a thoughtful look on her face, Marina takes measured steps around the entrance to the sanctuary, keeping count. When she's walked a near-perfect square in front of the entrance, Marina looks over at me.
About 30 feet on each side, do you think? She asks me. For the pit?
I think that'd do it.
Let me try something, Marina says, and then begins to concentrate.
She walks a 30-foot line away from the sanctuary's entrance, her hands fanning the air as she goes. A wall of ice begins to take shape along Marina's line, although its bottom edge doesn't make contact with the ground.
Help me hold it in place, would you?
Marina asks, glancing at me.
I'm not quite sure where this is going, but I play along.
Using my telekinesis, I hold up Marina's growing sheet of ice. I notice that the ice is thicker at the top and narrows to a lethally sharp edge at the bottom, almost like a guillotine blade. She walks the same lines as a second ago, this time generating ice as she goes. After a couple of minutes, Marina has created a hollow cube of ice, roughly 30 feet by 30 feet, with no top or bottom. The ice hovers above the ground, dripping water, and Marina has to continually use her legacy to keep it from melting.
What happens now? Adam asks, looking on.
We lift it up, Marina says, referring to the two of us, and then we slam it down with as much force as we can muster. Ready, Six? I do as instructed, using my telekinesis to levitate Marina's ice sculpture about 20 feet above the ground. Ready? She asks, looking at me. Now! Together, we drive the ice into the ground. There's a thudding sound as the sharpened edges drive into the dirt, followed by the sound of glass breaking as cracks form rapidly in the ice and begin to spread. All in all, the ice doesn't get driven very far into the earth, about 4 feet at most. Marina seems pleased with the result, though.
Okay, okay. Hold on a second.
She races around the box of ice, its four walls now embedded in the ground, and begins to reinforce the walls, thickening and hardening the ice as she touches it. When the cracks in the ice are sealed up and the broken chunks filled in, Marina kneels down at one of the corners and puts her hands on the ice as close to the ground as possible.
All right, I'm not sure if this part will actually work, she says. Here goes.
Marina closes her eyes and concentrates. Adam and I exchange a look, both of us pretty confused. Still, we stay quiet for what ends up being more than 5 minutes, watching Marina work her legacy. I want to put my forehead on the cold ice, but I worry that might screw up whatever she's doing.
I think I got it, Marina says at last, standing up and rolling her neck. Six, let's lift the ice back up.
Now you want it out of the ground? I ask.
Marina nods excitedly.
Quick, before it melts too much.
So we concentrate on the cube again. It feels much heavier this time, and as we lift it, I realize why. Marina spread the ice under the ground, connecting the four walls of her cube. When we lift the ice, it comes up with a ripping and crunching sound as the remaining roots of the grass are torn apart. The ice cube floats up on our telekinesis, and inside it sits a 4-foot-deep cross-section of the earth, perfectly maintained.
Gently now, Marina says as we transport the ice and earth off to the side. I got in there pretty deep, but it could still break apart.
Brilliant, Adam says, grinning at the floating mound. We won't have to cover the hole with, like, really big branches. Once we've dug it the rest of the way, we can just lay that piece back on top. It'll look normal when Cetricus Ross steps on it, but you should be able to cave it in from a distance with your telekinesis.
Marina nods. That was my thinking. We lower the immaculately shaped box of dirt and grass to the ground with a gentle thump. Without Marina constantly augmenting it with her legacy, the ice soon begins to melt away. The edges of our pit's lid get a little muddy, but that'll dry quickly, considering the heat. Adam strides forward, kneeling in front of the 30 by 30 hole in the ground.
My turn, he says.
He places his hands right into the dirt, and a second later I can feel vibrations flowing out from him. The seismic ripples are focused primarily in front of him, but his control isn't precise enough to keep them from fanning out. For a moment I feel a little bit queasy as the ground shifts beneath my feet, but I am able to quickly get a grip. The soil in front of Adam begins to loosen and shift, the packed-down layers beginning to break apart into sizable chunks. Adam looks over his shoulder at me.
How's that?
I use my telekinesis to lift a crumbly section of dirt and stone up from the pit, then chuck it into the jungle. It'll be easier to dig through now that Adam's broken up the dirt, but it's still going to be a pain in the ass. I give him an approving nod.
It's a start, I tell him.
He stands up.
I'm going to look for a shovel.
Adam can barely finish his thought, his eyes suddenly pinned to the sky behind me. I whip around, hearing the sound of an engine. No, it can't be. It's too soon. We aren't ready.
Six? Marina asks, her voice catching. What is that?
It's a ship. Sleek and silver, without the hard angles and guns like the other crafts I've seen the Moogs flying. It's like nothing I've ever seen before. Yet it's also oddly familiar. The ship's coming in fast, and it's headed right for us.